produced by Jeffrey Griselius, Joseph Cottrell and Ken Fuller. This is Yes Music Podcast, episode 623. Yes Album Listening Guides, Tales from Topographic Oceans, Part 8, The Unsung Hero, Gennaro Rippo.
Hi, this is Trevor Rabin, and you're listening to the Yes Podcast.
Welcome to episode 623 of the Yes Music Podcast, Two Fans' exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine, and co-host Mark Anthony Kay will not be along in a few minutes' time. Mark will be back next week. You can always get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, yesmusicpodcast.com. It seems like a long time since the last episode, but it's not, actually. Anyway, it was delightful to speak to a warm and friendly unsung hero of Yes last week. As you will hear, despite being very keen to be involved, Mark wasn't able to join in the conversation due to timing and technical issues, but he will be back next week. Gennaro actually contacted me quite some time ago and introduced himself. It's taken ages to coordinate a time to speak, but I'm sure you'll agree that it was well worth the effort, and he's bound to be joining us again soon. He's asked me not to open the comments function on the show notes for this week, but you can still send comments on what you hear to me via email, show@yesmusicpodcast.com, or by using the contact form on yesmusicpodcast.com. The link is at the top of the page. Please do send me your thoughts. There is time this week for a quick news roundup. Over the past week on the YMP discussion group on Facebook, Doug Curran shared the following. News that Rick Wakeman wrote the foreword for Carl Palmer's new book in the Fanfare for the Common Man box set. A happy birthday to Steve Howe. A Bill Bruford 1982 video of him playing an interesting mix of electronic and acoustic instruments. The tour news also posted by Rasmus Heider that Yes will be sharing the bill with Deep Purple in August and September in the US and Canada. And the prog magazine feature on Oliver Wakeman about his new album Anam Cara. For his part, Jeffrey Mason added a recent Rick Wakeman solo concert review, as well as an interview and some photos. A 2014 Wakeman interview, a 1979 poster from Indiana University, and a 1969 one from the Lyceum Theatre in London. The recent German prog magazine feature on Relayer. A review of Rick with the English Rock Ensemble in February. Prog magazine's latest Trevor Horn interview. A happy birthday to Steve Howe, by way of a still from the No Opportunity Necessary, No Experience Needed video. That's the one featuring the band driving recklessly in a yellow car. Autographs from 1967 of members of the band Kubaz. That's Stuart Leithwood, Roy Morris, Keith Ellis and Tony O'Reilly. Yes, that's right, Tony O'Reilly, the sometime very brief Yes drummer. An early 1970s photo of Rick Wakeman on the floor and a puppy peering out into the garden from a preferred chair. I originally read that caption as a puppy peeing out into the garden from a preferred chair. And music journalist Chris Welch interviewing Mike Tate, more about him later, about the intricacies of setting up Yes in and out of concert venues across multiple countries for the February the 13th, 1971 issue of Melody Maker. Ray Reithmeyer shared the news of a single SYN GLE, which has been reissued. It's Flower Man backed with 14-hour Technicolor Dream, although it's on the poster's 14th hour, that's not right, and features Chris Squire and Peter Banks, and Stephen Sullivan posted Mary Lee's lovely acoustic cover of Owner of a Lonely Heart. I added Dave Watkinson's great story about a musician called Chelsea and her connections with Chris Squire. That's one you should read in full. And several people mentioned Steve Howe, mentioning Yes, the Tomato story. That's a book by me, in a video interview with Trogly, the guitar YouTuber I mentioned in the book. It was a lovely surprise, and thanks to Mark, John Jinkley, I hope that's how you pronounce your name, John, Paul James, Martin Williams, not Mark Williams, and everyone I've forgotten to mention. Sorry if that's you, for letting me know. John Cowan shared the post by Billy Sherwood where he invites anyone who wants to join him online for a game of golf. No, really? And Stephen Schinder alerted us to their Steve Howe birthday tributes over on Yes Shift. Jilly Goodnews added the poster for a festival at St. Charles, Illinois featuring Asia, which is coming up, but it's the one featuring John Payne. And Dave Watkinson has been to see the Roger Dean Other Paths exhibition in London, and that includes many of the master's wonderful paintings. Over on X, at Steph Twitman shared in the Prog Seats album study of Tales from Topographic Oceans, and it was nice to see Rick Wakeman joining in with the birthday wishes for Steve Howe. Perhaps some people could learn something from that kindness. Perhaps we all could. Many thanks, as always, to everyone who's been in touch in any way this week, and remember to send comments to me directly about this week's episode, as mentioned above.
Yes Music Podcast, 600 episodes.
Hello.
Hello there.
Wait a minute. Are you recording right now?
Yes, is that okay?
Well, you really want to open Pandora's box, right?
Yeah.
Okay, that's okay. Well, good.
Last week, I began what I think will turn out to be a series of conversations with someone whose name you may recognize in connection with Yes, but his contribution to Tales from Topographic Oceans has been hidden for more than 50 years. The person I'm referring to was nicknamed Generator by Wendy, Eddie Offord's girlfriend at the time, and the name stuck. It was apparently easier for the band and crew to pronounce. I wonder if anyone remembered that fact in 1987, when the band moved into the big Generator era. If you have your copy of Relayer to hand, especially if it's an original CD version, where it's very obvious on the back of the case, take a look at the credits. It will say something like, produced by Yes and Eddie Offord, tapes by Gennaro Rippo. Gennaro, that's him. You may also have seen Generator's photo in the lineup of Yes crew in the 1975 US Relayer tour program. He's there alongside Adam Wilde, Ian Peacock, Ray Palmer, Gene Ristori, Nigel Luby, John Martin, Nunu Whiting and Claude Johnson Taylor. But the way he came to be involved with Yes is another of those remarkable tales that seems to have been almost commonplace in the world of 1970s rock. Richard North posted a review of Yes's two performances at the Whiskey A Go-Go in Los Angeles at the end of June 1971 on forgotten-yesterdays.com. Here's what he said. I was a huge fan of Yes at the time of this show and followed closely club and concert announcements. There was absolutely no mention of these two shows at the Whiskey in local papers. I got a call from my brother the afternoon of the show saying that he had happened to drive by the Whiskey as Yes were unloading their equipment and had met the band and was calling from John Anderson's room at the Hyatt on Sunset Boulevard. I was completely blown away. My brother is Christopher North, the founding keyboard player of the best American prog band, Ambrosia. I raced up to Hollywood and saw the show both nights. It was great to finally see and hear Yes live. They did two complete sets each night. Most of the songs were from the Yes album. I also was able to meet the band and the road crew, which was the beginning of a friendship which would lead to going to some of the recording sessions for Close to the Edge and Tales from Topographic Oceans. But most importantly, it led to one of my best friends, Gennaro Rippo, getting a job with Yes and becoming Eddie Offord's personal assistant. Gennaro told me that the reason he became involved with Yes at the Whiskey A Go-Go was because their equipment was late. He found himself helping to unload the kit when it arrived, and Yes's roadies, led by Phil Heppel, were most grateful and told Gennaro to come and see them if he was ever over in London. It's the kind of throwaway comment often heard in these situations, I suppose, but this time the recipient of the offer actually took it up the following year. Incredibly, Gennaro found himself, perhaps with Richard North, at AdVision Studios with Yes as they recorded Close to the Edge in 1972, alongside Eddie Offord in the control room. He tried to secure a role with the band at this point, but none were on offer. Despite this initial setback, Gennaro did manage to see the band perform at Crystal Palace on the 2nd of September 1972, the world premiere of Close to the Edge, along with, incidentally, Yes Music Podcast patron Ken Fuller. After returning to London in 1973, Gennaro again took up position next to Eddie Offord, and this time he stayed throughout every Tales from Topographic Oceans recording and mixing session at Morgan Studios, including through each night that Rick Wakeman preferred to work.
I spent more time on that album and was there longer than Rick Wakeman was.
Gennaro describes his Tales experience as a really good introduction to Yes World, and remembers another Eddie working at Morgan Studios at the time Yes were there recording Tales. It was Eddie Harris, the American jazz saxophonist. The album, called EH in the UK, featured all sorts of familiar names.
When we were doing Tales from Topographic Oceans, Atlantic, same label as us, they did an Eddie Harris upstairs with Deep Purple's drummer, Albert Lee on guitar, Chris Squire on bass.
Gennaro told me that he started working for Yes at Morgan Studios on the same day that Nigel Luby did. He worked for Eddie, and Nigel got a job with Chris Squire. However, you won't be able to find credits for Gennaro on anything to do with Tales, because despite being there for the whole recording and mixing process, he didn't have a British work permit, and so was never officially there. Subsequently, he took a trip to Denmark in order to be out of the way, while Eddie's manager, Dennis Muirhead, secured a work permit for him. This meant his name could be included in the Relayer credits. Those sessions are certainly one topic I'm very much looking forward to talking to Gennaro about at a later date. As for the Tales of Morgan Studios, Gennaro confirmed he witnessed the strange construction work that went on.
John liked the sound in his bathroom, so we got plywood and we stuck tiles to it. We made a vocal booth.
It's amazing to imagine John standing in the middle of Studio 3 at Morgan inside that hastily created fake bathroom. All the accounts I have read say that it didn't work. Maybe that was no surprise.
And then one time we got these cutouts of farm animals and put them in the studio.
These are the ones that allegedly quickly became covered in graffiti, but did feature some fanciful electronic components, according to Rick Wakeman and others. Electric udders, anyone? Gennaro says this was all just a bit of fun, but it was based on the fact that John Anderson was desperate to record away from the metropolis. In fact, he would have preferred to hold the sessions outside to try and create the right ambience for the fantastical album. Even though he thought it was a good idea, I can't imagine Eddie being keen on trying to create a studio sound in a forest. So perhaps the bales of hay brought into Morgan ended up being a better idea.
It was all fun, Kevin.
When I asked Gennaro what Eddie was like to work with, he stressed how clever he was. There is plenty of evidence for this, but to prove the point, Gennaro mentioned another character who was close to the band, Phil Carson. Phil was the London-based senior vice president of Atlantic Records, Yes's label, from 1968 to 1985, and a champion of both Led Zeppelin and Yes. Incidentally, both of these Atlantic stablemates used ELP's Manticore rehearsal facilities around this time, and Yes had just left that venue after completing preparations for the Morgan Tales sessions. According to Gennaro, there was an early link between Eddie Offord and Phil Carson.
He came from a grocery store background. You know those albums that used to be at grocery stores? They would do the whole album in one night from start to finish. And that's Eddie was so clever, he did that.
I also remember an interview with Chris Squire where he recounted playing as a session musician on this kind of record, and that he couldn't resist embellishing the bass lines rather than playing them straight. Perhaps Eddie met Chris through this route.
I was Eddie's bodyguard, student, studio manager, equipment man. I was all, it was just me and Eddie.
Eddie's contribution to progressive rock stretched further than Yes, of course. Originally a tape-op at AdVision Studios, where he first worked with Yes, he graduated to engineering and then producing. Gennaro points out that Eddie engineered and arguably co-produced ELP's self-titled album, Tarkus and Trilogy at AdVision. Another connection to Tales in that the aforementioned Manticore rehearsal studios were owned by ELP. And when they were ready to record Brain Salad Surgery in 1973, Eddie had to make a choice between continuing his ELP association or going with Yes to Morgan Studios. He chose Yes, and maybe it had something to do with the way the three-piece behaved in recording sessions.
Believe me, I went to a couple Emerson, Lake and Palmer sessions with Eddie at AdVision. And then it was like the Marx Brothers, those three guys in the studio. And then Eddie was like, see? He kept saying, see? See? This is how crazy these guys are.
Gennaro agrees that Eddie's ability to edit takes together to produce seamless songs was remarkable. However, he thinks that some of the stories have been exaggerated, including tales of scratching about on the floor looking for lost takes. But here's how Gennaro explains one of the incidents he did witness, at Morgan Studios.
We took a bit of Topographic Oceans, and it was an edit to send to, I think, Radio Luxembourg. The engineer, they needed a blank reel, you know, a metal reel. So basically, oh, here's one with a little bit of tape on it. So let me cut all this tape off this reel, and we can use this reel. And then they realized, wait a minute, that's the mix we just did. Why did you cut that? So then he kind of put that together.
I asked Gennaro about his experiences of the Yes musicians as they recorded Tales. Of course, he spent all his time in the control room, and Morgan Studios were known for their unusual setup. In order to get to the control room, you had to go through the studio. So presumably Gennaro, Eddie, and others didn't spend a great deal of time traipsing through the live area. Despite this, Gennaro remembers the contrast between Rick Wakeman at the Close to the Edge sessions and the Tales ones.
I could tell that he wasn't happy with the record. He was thinking about a solo career as well.
Gennaro had and still does have great respect for Rick Wakeman. Typical of his experience was the following story concerning a trick to Rick's house alongside Nunu Whiting, Alan White's drum tech.
We brought some equipment out to Rick's house, and then on the way there, the windshield broke on us, and there was glass everywhere. And when we got there, he was very nice to us, very cared to see how we were.
Another band at Morgan Studios during those 4 months, famously, was Black Sabbath. Rick has said that he spent a lot of the time drinking with the Sabbath guys, and even ended up recording keyboards for their song Sabra Cadabra, from the album they were completing Over the Road from Yes in another Morgan studio. Gennaro remembers meeting lead singer Ozzy Osbourne on his regular visits to the Morgan Studios canteen.
He was a very happy Englishman who liked to drink. And luckily I got to eat there on Yes's tab every day. That's what I was paid.
Clearly, as a totally unofficial member of the Yes setup, Gennaro's remuneration was in kind only. From his point of view, the whole band contributed a great deal to the creation of Tales. The music was certainly John Anderson and Steve Howe's original creation, and
John was just like being John, you know. I got it. Like John was being John. Steve was like, you know, doing the guitar parts.
So Gennaro was in the studio for all the recording sessions, but the work was clearly not over when all the parts had been completed.
The Yes mixing sessions at Morgan, they started around midnight. I was there every day. I would get there at 4 and came home at 5 in the morning. I was there the whole time.
Like Eddie, Gennaro turned out to be multi-talented, and his work ethic appealed to Eddie, who had a plan for the next stage of work with Yes, going out on tour, and finding himself a little help.
Eddie was getting tired, getting burnt out a little bit from producing, engineering. Eddie got all his equipment, and then he noticed that I had stamina because I was at every night of the session, and I was accepted by the crew and the band. Okay, Eddie designed a mixing console. It was for a sound company called IES. And they made three of those consoles. One for Emerson, Lake & Palmer, take on the road. One for Eddie to take with his own personal equipment that we later, I got everything together for a portable studio, yeah, which we took to Woodstock, New York. And then another one for the sound company, Hi-Rate. And so during the mixing of all during the Yes album, he was having this equipment built. And then a week before the tour, we started at Bournemouth Winter Gardens were the first shows. First, John wanted me to be his roadie. Eddie said, I got all this equipment. I'll show you how to set it up for me. We'll take it on the road. You can be in charge of it. And I'll teach you. Next week, I was at Bournemouth Winter Gardens. I was in every English balcony, all those old theaters that you guys have. And I set it up upstairs in the balcony on the ledge. And then I also set up Michael Tate's equipment. Michael Tate was on the left. I was in the middle. I mixed the vocals, the keyboards, and I had the reboxes for the tape cues, the opening music, the Firebird Suite. And then we had like a church organ on during Close to the Edge, the birds on Close to the Edge, the church organ on Close to the Edge, and various tape effects.
Gennaro points out that Eddie's flexibility set him apart from other studio engineers and producers of the day.
What Eddie could do, and none of these engineers in England would even dare try going on the road mixing a band live. They're not in the studio in a controlled environment. We played in America, all the hockey places, all the English theaters, all the outdoor shows. Eddie, from his experience before I got there, learned a lot about mixing sound live, more than any English. More Roy Thomas Baker, no, they couldn't do it. None of those guys could do it.
Eddie and Gennaro became a dynamic duo for Yes. One of the most memorable venues Yes played at in those days was the Rainbow Theatre in London. After four concerts in 1972, the band returned for a five-night stint between 20th and 24th of November 1973, playing Tales in its entirety alongside Close to the Edge. In fact, the day after this run of concerts, Rick Wakeman decided to leave the group, partly as a reaction to having to play the Tales material live. As Forgotten Yesterdays puts it, Saturday, November the 24th, 1973. Wakeman quits, but is convinced by the band, Brian Lane and Atlantic's Phil Carson to stick it out until the end of the remaining Tales tours. Of course, Gennaro was there at these gigs, working alongside the rest of the crew, including Steve Howe's guitar technician, Claude Johnson Taylor.
Me and Claude, when I was with Yes, we would be the Rainbow load-in crew.
I took the opportunity to ask Gennaro a little about manager Brian Lane.
His role was to encourage the band in anything they wanted. You want that Rolls Royce? Yeah, get it. Yeah. Oh, they had nice cars. You should have seen the cars back in the day. And so Brian would, oh yeah, you want a new flat? Yeah. You want to give your wife a blank checkbook to redo the flat? Yeah. Okay. Oh, wait. Here. Okay. Yeah. And then I'm doing 19 shows in 21 days in England. Yeah. Or how about 41 shows in 43 days? All to them. Yeah, of course. They like money. They like nice things. They have nice things. When you're in a band, you have to go tours. And then Brian was always good to me. He was always good to them. He was married to the lady whose father was Green Silk Stamps. His real name is Harvey Freed.
Gennaro's living arrangements at this time also brought him into more contact with the Yes setup. Originally staying in a youth hostel and a bed and breakfast, Eddie stepped in to help out.
After the Rainbow shows on that tour, I stayed in the bed and breakfast across the street from the Rainbow Theater. And we found out, he said, well, you can come live with me. And we lived in his dad has offered Ofco Furniture Supply, 17614 Vauxhall Bridge Road. And he had the penthouse. So I stayed at Eddie's place at the penthouse and lived with them and worked on all the equipment. We had all the equipment up there. And Alan White I was in Alan White's room because Alan White used to live with Eddie, but then he moved out. So I took Alan White's room.
However, band setups weren't the only activity the crew were engaged in.
I remember we put a driveway, me and Claude and Nunu, we redid Brian Lane's house, the asphalt driveway.
Life on the road with Yes wasn't always plain sailing, of course. Even though they were at the time one of the biggest touring bands in the world, their technical equipment wasn't always the best quality. I won't name the late AdVision engineer in the following story, but as you will hear, the quality of his work left a little to be desired.
He tried to make some effects pedals for Steve Howe. One almost hit me in the head when his road, because he didn't make it too well. It didn't work during a show, and I was taking down the console, I got it thrown at me. My radio spares little DI box, did not have much luck making equipment for Steve Howe.
There were also teething problems with the iconic and innovative Roger and Martin Dean stage sets.
And then Roger and his brother Martin, they designed all the sets, and then when they went to Bournemouth Winter Gardens, they realized that they had to cut the sets, get them into the auditorium, get them through the door. He learned that you can design a set, but you have to make sure when you take it on the road, how to pack it and how to make sure it goes in the door.
Despite issues with these stage sets, Roger Dean was always keen to get involved with whatever was going on.
Well, Roger Dean helped me set up the consoles. Roger Dean, on the first night of Bournemouth Winter Garden, we were loading in. He was so enthusiastic to be around. said, yeah, I'll help you. Sure, I'll give you a hand. Very nice man.
Set dimensions weren't the only challenges for the crew, however.
Rick Wakeman, in the Tales from Topographic Oceans, there's a church organ part. Rick had a portable church organ made and trying to get that in the doors. It was three pieces with pipes and everything. And then putting it in a room backstage, miking it, we had to do. That was quite an event. We had to learn how to portableize and make sure we got that in venues.
Another key member of the Yes setup was Michael Tate, whose staging company Tate Towers has gone on to be a dominant player in the industry to the present day. Tate was always innovating and seemed to be able to turn his hands to anything practical the band needed.
I love Mick Tate. He lives in Pennsylvania right now, and his Tate Towers lighting set design is with Taylor Swift. He sold that company, though. And Michael Tate was famous for having a zip cord communication system with all the follow spots, a novel idea at that time where it's just a two-wire cable, and then you clamp onto it. See, Tales from Topographic changed the Yes organization. Yeah, well, Michael Tate could roll with the changes. You see, when I joined, Yes was just started to get into big places, and they used to do the clubs or the Rainbow. But when Tales came out, Michael Tate handled the changing and the arena show, that phase of the operation.
Still an anonymous member of the Yes crew, Gennaro continued his live work with Eddie around the US for the whole of the Tales tour, and 50 years later still credits his experiences with Eddie as crucial in his own development.
With Eddie and with Yes, I've never been exposed to so many groundbreaking creative people who later became major manufacturers of equipment, sound companies, everything. Yes was a doorway to the major Premier League.
After the Tales tours were complete, Gennaro continued to work with Eddie. The portable equipment they developed and used for live sound on tour was subsequently transported to Chris Squire's house, New Pipers, in Virginia Water, Surrey, where the band, now with keyboardist Patrick Mraz, recorded Relayer, again with Gennaro and Eddie at the controls. But that's a story for another time, when we will welcome Gennaro back onto the Yes Music Podcast.
The 11th Illusion of Yes Music Podcast.
Just before we go, here are the YMP producers and half the patrons. Yes Music Podcast producers are Joseph Cottrell, Ken Fuller and Jeffrey Cresselius. And half the Yes Music Podcast patrons are Jim Morrison, John Pickles, Declan Logg, Gary Betts, Aaron Steelman, Michael Handahan, Barry Gorski, Steve Perry, Doug Curran, Martin Kelberg, Todd Dudley, Rachel Hadaway, Lind, Paul Hales, Craig Estenes, Mark James Lang, Steve Rode, David, Bob Martellotta, John Holden, Stephen Lamb, Dem, Fred Barringer, Scott Colombo, Chris Bandini, David Hayden and John Thompson. Thank you very much indeed to all those patrons for their continuing support for the Yes Music Podcast. If you'd like to join them to help out financially, then head over to Patreon, patreon.com/YesMusicPodcast, or click on the link on yesmusicpodcast.com. So that's just about all the time we have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. We will be back, we hope, next week with Mark in tow. So in the meantime, please do keep listening and getting involved via x.com, Facebook or Instagram. So until next time, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.